This is CliffCentral.com. This is Disrupt with Mpumi Nhlapo, powered by Two Systems.
Good day. Thank you for joining us. Welcome to Disrupt with Mpumi Nhlapo, yet another exciting episode of the show that we've got today. In the studio, we've got another guest joining us all the way from Cape Town, Peter Grobler. Peter, good morning. Welcome. Morning. We were chatting earlier, and you've got a very interesting background. You had your own business, which you sold into the AdCorp Group. You had various roles and functions in there, the senior leadership. And most recently, you've taken up the role to head up one of the subsidiary companies, Tigertail Digital. And we're going to be talking a little bit about that. More broadly, we're talking about employment, about job seeking, about the new world of work, why a digital company and why that makes sense. So really tackling quite a few interesting topics, especially this time of year where people might be looking to make a change or really looking at how they're going to apply themselves into 2018. So thank you very much for joining us. On this show, for those of us that are joining for the first time, we really talk about organizations that are disruptive, organizations that are tackling existing industries in a different way or pioneering new industries, which I think Tigertail is really looking to do some pioneering and reshaping the landscape. Thank you to our sponsors, T-Systems, for making the platform available. And for all the listeners, thank you very much for joining us once again. Peter, how are you?
Good, and you?
Good, good. You said earlier on to me that you're a bit of a maverick. You like to do things differently. Your background, you know, you're currently heading up Tigertail Digital, but I know you've done quite a few things prior. Can you give me a quick synopsis of kind of where you came from?
Yeah, I can. Look, started in sales in the late 90s. Moved on into the tech space totally by accident.
Okay.
I was introduced to a guy who was on a flight between Joburg and Cape Town, which then was asked to create an IT desk for one of the sort of staffing business back in the day.
Mm.
And because I was in sales, they asked me would I mind joining them in a separate business which they wanted to start. So in the late 90s, we started Network International and had that for about a year. And then I was approached by a company called the Pillar Group back then to start their operations in Cape Town.
Okay.
The Pillar Group happened purely by somebody from Adapt IT, which we all know is quite a successful business today by virtue of share price alone.
Yeah.
You know, a guy called Gideon Legrandsi referred me to the owners of Pillar Group and said, well, talk to Peter to start your business Cater. The fact is I had a 15-minute with Gideon conversation in my life. That's how much time I spent with him, yet he referred me.
Wow.
So then all the rest was history. I started building Pillar in Cape Town. We later on transformed Pillar by doing a PE deal, changed the name to IC Blue Technologies. And then in 2009, we sold that business to Paracon, which is now part of the AdCorp Group.
And what did that business do, IC Blue? What were you involved in?
Look, it had a couple of elements. It had a business solution side. It had a large loyalty business component, loyalty software per se.
Okay.
And then it had a large labor component, which was obviously the part that we sold to Paracon.
A labor, what do you mean? Like you provided
like consulting contractors. In
okay.
IT, yeah.
Okay. And what size was that business at the time that you sold it?
In Joburg, roughly about 250 people, and up in or down in Cape Town, plus minus 100.
Okay, so a substantial business at the time. And the decision to sell that, you wanted to pursue new things, what happened?
Oh, it wasn't entirely only my choice.
Yeah, the shareholders, of course, partners. Yeah.
I must also say that Paracon is a great company, and I mean, they're quite persuasive when it comes to sort of like acquisitions and mergers, so you hardly walk out the boardroom without making a deal.
Ah, okay. And then you moved into the broader AdCorp space in senior leadership. What roles did you fulfill during that time?
So firstly, it started off with sort of sales management for the Western Cape. I later got given an opportunity to become more involved on a group level as it holds multiple operating companies, which varied from an Indian consulting business through to training businesses to project management businesses. So I just became like a layer across all these entities,
okay,
taking them to market and helping them to scale.
Okay. Then recently, you said September last year, you moved across and came into the Tigertail business. But you told me a fascinating story about how the business was actually founded, which I quite like. Can you share that story again?
Yes, I can.
Yeah.
So to come back, last year, May, basically the name Tigertail was the only thing we had. We then hosted a creative hackathon at Workshop 17. We had about 10 teams of designers and developers compete against each other to come up with the MVP, minimum viable product for the business, plus its corporate identity. From the event, what was the 48-hour hackathon, so people weren't smelling well after like 24 hours. But we then selected three finalists. We flew them up to Johannesburg, and we hosted a client event at our offices here. And the clients actually picked the brand as we see it today with the MVP. And the MVP was digital recruitment. And I say was because we've been flipping the business around and repositioning it currently.
Yeah. So I want to just dwell on that for a bit longer, because what inspired the organization to want to just kickstart a business without knowing where it's going to go? What drove that?
It started initially from an internal services unit within the Adcore professional services side called Talent Crowd. And what Talent Crowd was, a sort of research-based entity that would research skills for the market for the other businesses.
Okay.
And then hand it over, and those businesses will then employ them or, you know, contract them to customers, etc. So it was built on a highly sort of skilled research capability in the back end.
Okay.
And then with digital inclining, you know, the whole skills demand with digital increasing, you know, it became a good use case to like replicate that and maybe then spin it into a fully fledged business.
Okay.
Is what happened at the end of the day.
Yeah. And so, because my thoughts on this is that it would have been very easy to follow, you know, a very successful business model that you've applied over the years, which would be, you know, start a division, give it a name, put some managers in there, and then go to the market and do what you needed to do. But for whatever reason, you decided that you needed to take a more disruptive approach to launch this particular business. Why was that decision made?
Look, it's a cliche. A lot of people, you know, use the loosely term millennials.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
So how do you attract the new generation, you know, to get them into your business to help you service your customers? So I think it was a big component of that, you know, to create a disruptive brand, you know, that's got a startup culture, will always have a startup culture,
okay,
where people can relate to, you know, that sort of in this new generation. But with that said, I mean, you know, it didn't end up with just young people engaging us. You know? We recently had a data scientist, which actually should not be working. He should not even be driving.
Sure.
You know, that's how old he is, but I don't know if he's listening. But yeah, that was the basis for it. You know, how do you create a business where that will attract, you know, people that think differently.
Mm. Just on that note, we spoke earlier about this term, the smart creatives, which I picked up from a book by Eric Schmidt about, you know, life at Google.
Mm.
And you were talking to me about, you know, obviously you don't like to jump onto, you know, fancy industry terms all the time. But one of the things they talk about there is that a smart creative is not defined by age, gender, you know, nationality. It's really about, you know, the way someone wants to apply themselves, the way somebody wants to work. And so there could be, you know, past retirement age, for example, but the energy, how they get creative influence is really what drives them. Is that, you know, in essence, part of what you creating in terms of the culture of your business as well?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I totally agree with, you know, there is no age limit. And I might want to ask you a question. Let's look at the adoption to digital in this country alone. What do you think is the average age of the highest adoption rate?
40s? I don't know.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah.
45.
45, wow.
Yeah. Good friend of mine, Richard Mulholland,
yeah,
you know, I said to him, what do you think about millennials? He said, well, I don't think anything of it because my granddad's a millennial, because when he wakes up in the morning, the first thing he does, he takes his phone and look at Facebook, you know. So 100%, you know, I don't think there's any age limit to being disruptive and innovative.
Absolutely.
Like I said to you earlier, I think it's more about looking at the things you hate and wanting to change them.
Mm.
You know, that's what actually drives disruption and innovation.
Mm. And what are the things that you're looking to change? So where are the areas that you see, particularly in South African and African context, that we can be possibly more disruptive, or we can change the way that we're doing things? Because, you know, employment and job seeking is such a topical issue, regardless of what the political regime might be. And I think we tend to understand it in one dimension, you know, so study, get a good job. I mean, I know people always talk about the millennials think differently, but even till today, it's the basic structure in our economy. You know, you go through matric, go through varsity or some sort of tertiary qualification, and you get a job. But I know you've had different views.
Talks to the hiring process in that country, I think that's where it falls flat. So everybody still follows that same process that you've just pointed out.
Yeah.
And it's because you actually can't get hired if you don't have a degree or you at least have a matric. But then you'll find, you know, guys that left school with Standard 8 that's actually built quite disruptive tech companies. You know, even tomorrow if they flip it and they want to go and work for a corporate and do the same there, they can't.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, there's a lot of moving components in, like, you know, sort of like following and starting to commit to how do we really disrupt and transform, you know, our skills base, and how do we get the right people into our businesses. So it actually starts with us, you know, the people that's hiring and putting certain processes in place.
Mm.
And we have to be acceptable to the fact that, you know, technology, if you look at the open source library and stack out there, that, you know, you can't keep up. Not even institutions that train can keep up with how fast it's moving.
Yeah. But does it not create then a pressure on organizations? And I'm now talking not only organizations, but the broader ECHO group. Does it not create pressure for you? Because on the one end, you're getting briefs from customers that say, we want an MBA and 30 years experience, but you must be a millennial type of thing. And on the other hand, you need to sustain the business by providing them with this pipeline of talent. At what point do you challenge the briefs that are coming back to say, but you could fulfill these roles or these skills differently? Is there room for that?
I think Targetel is a use case for that. That's what we've been doing over the last, you know, 6 to 8 months.
Talk me through that.
You know, we go and see customers and they give you a brief, but, you know, 100% or let's say 80% of the time, they don't even know what they're looking for, you know. And that's where that research component comes in again. You know, we often find ourselves lately that we're actually telling customers, you know, well, this is actually what you're looking for and this is what your brief should look like. And you should exclude this because you're not going to find it. The people that you're chasing after, they don't have, you know, a PCOM IS degree.
I see. Yeah. So if you're looking for the latest digital UX designer or whatever, they don't necessarily going to have studied become finance with marketing honors or whatever.
UX, you want somebody who studied psychology.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what you want to tell.
But what about for the more traditional roles? You know, an analyst. Yeah. What else are they? You know, there's almost, because I'm asking because even in the more traditional jobs, so the non type of digital era roles, you still want people to think differently, that apply themselves differently, because that's going to influence how they shape the business into the future. Is there no scope even within that to challenge the traditional ways of kind of identifying talent?
Yes and no. I mean, so companies are starting to follow a bimodal operating model when it comes to IT.
Yep.
So sort of like leaving the traditional on the one side, optimizing it, make sure it ticks, and then having the digital units totally, you know, separate to those entities. Mm. You'll see even companies now splitting their tech component, you know, also out of that area. So leaving legacy and mainframe to run on its own, they'll optimize it and keep the lights on.
Mm-hmm.
And separate to that, see how do they actually move away from that legacy onto the, you know, new way of working.
Yeah.
So I'm sure in this optimization legacy area, there's one or two guys that want to put up their hand and move across.
Yeah.
But, you know, it also goes back to how you were brought up in IT. You know, if you're very procedural programming sort of type of person, you know, even if you look at a data context today, if you're a traditional ETL developer and you're now starting to talk about unstructured data, you know,
it's a different world.
It's a different world.
Yeah.
You know, this guy, but
it's all data, but it's very different. Yeah.
So he says, how can you interrogate the data? Because, you know, we haven't done any transforming of the data.
Mm.
You don't need to, you know. So they don't flip, you know, to that side. So then we have to leave them there so that they run the data warehouses until we switch them off.
Okay.
So I think it's always going to be a combination. I've met some very smart elderly people in IT that has flipped.
Yeah.
So, or to digital. So yeah, I think there's a bit of both, but I don't think there's a solid answer to that question to say, well, you know, here's the correct way to sort of move and shift people to that. I mean, that's the biggest challenge in this new way of work, is how do you flip your culture? So, you know, you'll hear from the industry, one of the big sort of loosely terms thrown around is agile coaches.
You know?
So somebody to teach you how to do things in this different way of work, you know. Because some people just don't flip. It just doesn't happen overnight. You know?
Yeah, the propensity isn't there.
Yes.
I want to now shift back to Tiger Tail. Mm. So yesterday I decided I want a digital job. And I went onto your website to see how I might get myself employed by one of your amazing companies that you partner with. But I didn't get to speak to a human being. I didn't even get to send a human being an email. I think the robot I met was called Norman.
Yeah.
He introduced himself as Norman. Talk to me about the thinking behind having an artificial intelligence interface as the first point of interaction in your business.
I think you can't go out and call yourself digital and then you put a telephone number up with a receptionist that's going to answer and then direct your call.
Yeah.
I think if you make a statement and you take something on, I think you need to commit and you need to look internally first. You know, and from the baseline, that's how the market's going to perceive you.
Mm.
And I think Norman's done well.
I'm still waiting for the response from Norman. If you chat to him or her later, please let.
I'll.
So I want to just chat about Norman for a little bit because it was quite an interesting experience for me. You know, so I'm getting the questions back and I'm responding and I'm choosing the different options, but I couldn't help a little bit to be like, it'd be nice if I was talking to a person, right? And I just want to get a sense of, does that suggest that I'm not necessarily suited to that line of employment or what's happening there? I mean, and you obviously have done a little bit of research amongst your candidates that have come through the process. What are people telling you about this type of engagement?
People love it.
Uh-huh.
I must comment on Norman. Norman's a process programmed AI
which
robot.
I picked up, yeah. Yes.
So he doesn't really have any cognitive capability yet. You know, that's sort of next level for us to explore.
Yeah.
But I think the strength of the business is that we most of the times get to you before you even get to Norman. So I think that's the power, you know, from a business perspective.
Okay.
Norman's there for the odd person that, you know, got lost in the web and landed up on the page and is engaging with some fun way of you know, getting to know the company.
Yeah. But is there, I mean, do you believe that more and more the functions that you fulfill as a organization that's matching people to organizations, is that going to become more and more automated? It's going to be more robots and bots and interfaces doing the work that you do today?
Definitely. That's a given. It's a given not only for our industry, it's a given for many industries out there. Automation is sort of on the lips of all the big organizations, especially where you have volumes in terms of processing.
Mm.
You know, that's a big topic. We're currently actually launching a robotics business the 1st of March.
Okay.
And that's with a joint venture with an entity in Australia.
Are you able to talk about what the intentions there are or not yet?
Yeah, well, I can.
Yep.
So, the field's called RPA. So it's okay. It starts with basically manual, mundane processes that people capture.
Okay.
And automating that. Because what happens is people have to do it, and now people actually can't move to the next level. They can't themselves innovate and forward them because, you know, somebody needs to do this task. So that's a very good use case for robotics. But the field's growing. I mean, there's more and more automation happening in that space.
Yeah.
So our business basically is a joint venture with a leading consulting firm in Asia Pacific called the Reveal Group. So come 1st of March, we'll create what we call Reveal Group SA.
Okay.
And it's a 50-50% ownership between us and the owners in Australia. And we'll actually be one of the leading partners then in SA for technology that's used in the RPA space called Blue Prism.
Okay. And give me some use cases just to make it simple for someone who's listening. So this, you know, robotic process automation, what are some of the use cases that easily come to mind in that space?
So I'll do one which we did internally with AdCorp. So from a UIF perspective, the capturing on the claiming needs to be done by people, but right. They make mistakes.
Yes.
So you have a person that has to claim that. That delays the process. They're actually out of a job. They're reliant on that money.
Yeah.
And so if you put a bot and you teach him the process, there's no error in doing it.
Okay.
And you actually cut down that time and that error. And effectively affect people in the process, their lives.
Yeah. And what about the flip side of that? Because I think it relates to the conversation we're having around automation in your industry. I mean, on one end, your business is about trying to help people find employment and help organizations find talent. But on the other end, you know that, you know, with digitization, you know, on the horizon, a lot of what gets done will be automated. Where do you see that kind of ending up, that storyline?
That person that understands that process, that manual process that he executed up to that point, you asked earlier, how about the traditional people and what's next for them? How do they get to digital?
Mm.
So if they're process thinker, they're the best, you know, candidates to actually get skilled up into how to, you know, execute RPA technology.
Okay.
So there's a flip side to the, on the one side, you sort of like cutting down operational expenditure by automating some of the things, but you're also creating opportunity at scale, you know, using technology.
Yeah.
Because if you just have to think in your own context here at Cliff Central, how many processes is there?
Tons.
You know?
Yeah.
So just think of if you automate those, if you could, how much time you would have to actually spend on other things that will actually make your own business and your own entity more successful.
Mm.
So there's two sides to that coin.
Yeah. So do you foresee that your business will, and not just Tagatel, but the broader business will spend a lot more time looking at what employment looks like in the future? So would it be less about people, or is it going to become even more about people?
Look, one thing you can never take away, people buy from people.
Yeah.
And that will never go away. But I think the process to get to the people, you know, can be automated. And we're human beings. We make mistakes. If I'm dealing with volume currently, you know, I'm going to let one or two things slip through the cracks. But if I actually automated it and the alerts is there, that will never happen, you know.
Okay. So basically the people aspect will always be there to give context.
Absolutely.
To what the technology needs to deliver.
And quality control.
Quality control, human beings over robots?
Yeah, of course, yes.
Yeah. Let's talk. How would that play out?
So there's always a variable in any process or any engagement, you know. And until you reach the cognitive state within the automation landscape,
yeah,
you know, people aren't going to think like humans do, you know.
Yeah.
You know, if you throw a ball at me, now I'm going to dodge, you know. I'm going to have to throw the robot a couple of times before it starts dodging.
When a ball comes at you, you need to dodge. Yeah. Okay. Tagatel also does a few other things besides, so we've spoken about the robotic process automation. We know that you do placement, but I know you said there's a few other areas that you're looking at. What are some of the other things that you're doing within the business?
So I think let me just close that loop. So on the MVP being digital recruitment, we've put that now across the business. So we've created verticals, of which RPA is one of them.
Okay.
So recruitment will run across them as a service. So customers can either engage from a robotics perspective in buying permanent resources, contractors, or they can ask us to consult. We can do scope of work or outcome-based. So those are the sort of service layers running up, but permanent recruitment would be across them. So permanent recruitment will stay.
Okay.
I mean, our clients love what we're doing. So it's got its own clients, and it will also service the verticals of the business, if that makes sense.
So just when you say the verticals, I'm not quite clear.
So Reveal Group SA is a vertical with a service, which is RPA, that sits down and underneath Tagatel.
Yes.
So Tagatel acts as a wrapper for all things digital, mm-hmm. of which RPA is one.
Okay.
And the company executing that is Reveal Group.
Okay.
So as an example, in the whole application development and DevOps space, I had a choice. Either build that capability or go and find, a well-aligned, unconstrained, like-minded thinking company in the fintech space that does DevOps, which I did. So from a DevOps perspective, Tangent Solutions is our partner.
I see.
Okay, so, and that's part of a model that I call partnership to ownership. So we partner with these smaller fintechs. We help them to scale their business, and then over time, we would acquire percentage stake in it.
Okay, so they become part and parcel of the organization.
100%.
It sounds to me like quite a move from the traditional business, the Adcorp business, in terms of how it's modeled and how it functions, because by and large what you do in that space is you're providing those services to other organizations and without necessarily the intention to acquire them. Is that a deliberate move?
It's a deliberate move, yeah.
Okay, and the motivation or the rationale?
I think it's to move up the value chain in terms of the traditional business. So I think Tagatel is a big use case for that.
Mm-hmm.
So far, so good.
Yeah.
And we're going to continue to push forward. And for me, there's another problem statement in that we're addressing at the same time. Is if you look at digital as a whole, just as an example, and to places where you can procure those services. You know, the idea here is to disrupt the supply chains. And the main outcome is, you know, to create a commercially sustainable alternative to what's out there in the market.
Okay.
You would know from your background, you can't contract with certain entities for long periods of time because you'll be bankrupt.
Absolutely.
And it's no need to have, you know, rates and pricing at the levels they are. So, you know, I can take a tangent solution. They would never have a chance at one of the big banks because they don't have the credentials.
Mm.
But their pricing is sustainable. You can actually have in a customer's digital transformation program, you can actually be there from the end, from the start to the end.
And very competitively.
And very competitively.
Yeah.
And how does these guys compare to what's out there in the market? They tops. They, you know, they're even better than some of the guys I've known for, you know, donkey years.
Yeah. Then aligned to that conversation around price and value is the conversation we had earlier around offshoring.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're very passionate about, you know, what we can do within our own country and then I guess within our own continent as well. What are your views around that? Because, you know, most of the large organizations, whether it's banks, whether it's retailers, have got a strong offshoring component, mainly into India, you know, by and large. That's where a lot of our ties are. I'm not sure whether it is still are they still very competitive at a pricing point of view. Is it really legacy? So what's maintaining that status as it is currently?
They're not competitive. Prices are the same.
Okay.
The only benefit or why they're sort of like beating us to the punch there is they can scale. They got numbers.
Okay.
So I always say, you know, if we take hands, for instance, you know, if I can just get 10 companies around the table, for instance, to each give R1 million, we take 10 million rand, we take 50 people, we put them in a room, and we train them, then we're already addressing the problem.
I see.
Whether 10 of them are working for me tomorrow, and 10 of them are working for you tomorrow, but at least we're doing something about it. But unless we can reach the point where we can scale and provide, you know, at a drop when a bank says, look, I'm going to do this in digital, I need 100 of that.
Mm.
You can't get 100 of that in South Africa.
Why not?
It's our own fault. We must come to the party and start training people.
Mm. But, I mean, what are they doing differently? I mean, do they have mass development? Trying to get a sense, you know.
So there's an entity in India that was part of the group previously. I'll tell you that there is software engineering university or practice that trains people, pushes out about 15,000 engineers every 6 months.
15,000 engineers every six months. Does that then speak back into the, you know, primary education system that allows them to have that scale available to teach? Or is it just the resources? I mean, we've got a large population, a large unemployed population, even people with degrees. We've still got significant numbers of people that can't get jobs. And yet what you're telling me about here is a skills shortage issue. And we've spoken about skills shortage for donkey years, you know, decades. We've spoken about tech skill shortages. I mean, I know now it's like cybersecurity, data analysts, you know, we talk about it all the time. But it doesn't seem to come to any sort of conclusive answer.
I think we need to take the blockers off, you know, so Business South Africa and Corporate South Africa. If I track back to the late 90s, I mean, I was involved with a technology called ObjectStar.
Okay.
And I'll use the following example. Can I use company names?
Of course, okay. Yeah.
So SAA back then was a big user of the technology. And there was a guy called Angus Lilienfeld ended up working for me. And how he got into ObjectStar, he worked for Edblow. He actually delivered a bed to one of the executives.
Yeah.
And while he walked out, he looked on the screens and said, hey, what you guys doing? He said, no, we're programming in ObjectStar. He says, do you want to start programming? He said, yeah. Threw him in a flight school. 2 weeks later, threw him in a customer, and there's he today, one of the, you know, best ObjectStar programmers.
Mm.
That's how it worked back then. But for some reason, you know, we believe that people can't do it if they don't have experience.
Yeah.
And they're wrong. And we must find ways and means to show people that it's that sort of doesn't exist. I don't know how we got to that point, but it wasn't like that back then.
Yeah.
And back then you didn't have Google, you didn't have Udacity, you didn't have Coursera. You know, now you have all those things.
Mm.
I mean, like, I know people that's still at school that can program in 12 languages, you know.
So on their own accord.
On their own. They're on their own.
Yeah.
They actually have workable programs running.
Sure. I think part of it as well, and it's kind of what you know, with our guests, we try to do here is to demystify some of the stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's so much jargon. There's so many nice words, and they really are great words to use. They tend to, I guess, make people feel very conscious about knowing and not knowing. When the way you've described it now is really about spending a couple of weeks messing around with it, and it kind of then makes sense.
Yeah.
It pulls itself together. Within your organization, you've got Talk IT, and they're a well-established training provider. Have you got any insights into what's happening in their world? I mean, are they still doing your traditional A plus, N plus? Like, you know, have they shifted?
Way beyond that. I mean, Talk IT is the biggest trainer for, well, the only trainer for AWS for Amazon Web Services in the country.
Fantastic.
If you look at the RPA business that we're spinning up now, so we've Carl, who's been within Talk for many years. I mean, he's most probably the most qualified person on the planet because everything that Talk trains, he's like a trainer practitioner on.
Sure.
So we've just took him on a whole track to become a practitioner on the RPA technology, Blue Prism. So as from the 1st of March, Talk IT will actually train that for us.
Okay. And is that something that was driven internally or externally? So was it pressure from the market, or was it like something you guys saw to say, we're going to need to make significant shifts here?
It's internal thought leadership,
yeah.
Spotting the areas that make sense, yeah.
I'm asking that because I'm pretty sure it's not just your organization. I'm sure the banks, you know, the motor manufacturers are thinking the same way. But there's a collective, I guess, cohesion of driving it that seems to be missing. I don't know. I mean,
look, I refer to the thing that my team knows. So the theory of constraint, you know, that's one thing that pisses me off. You know, people being constrained in their thinking.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the big corporates and the businesses are. You know, they're too constrained in their thinking, so they can't move quickly. You know, because people can always tell you 10 reasons why not to do something, but they can't give you one why.
Yeah.
So I'm the one why guy. And, you know, that's why if you stay unconstrained, you know, you'd scale at large.
Yeah.
But if you start talking bigger corporates or consulting firms, they can't, because global's telling them how they must operate.
Yeah.
You know, so us as an organization will never be constrained.
And is it something that you feel can be ingrained in the young people? You know, as you see young people looking for new opportunities, looking for new jobs.
It's in them already.
Yeah.
You know, last year they had that Women Entrepreneurial Summit in Cape Town. There was, Michaela Uleman was there.
Yep.
Who spun up that lemonade business.
Yeah.
I mean, later that year she got an $11 million contract with some food reseller.
Hmm.
And she said something when speaking at that conference. She said, they asked her what's the best advice that she can give to young entrepreneurs and people doing things differently in business. And she said, never stop dreaming like a kid. Because if you dream like a kid, then everything's possible.
Yeah.
You know, if you build a business today, you want to do something, you know, the way that we're doing, and you say, oh, okay, but to spin up this idea, I need to register this, and I need to do that, and, you know what, let's rather leave it, let's put it here. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So if you start thinking like that again, you know, I think, you know, your whole world will change.
Absolutely. So when I was looking, you know, trying to understand your business, one of the things that came up on Google, which Google's quite nice, because it can actually throw you into different spaces, is, you know, the phrase, you know, the tiger by the tail. And so I got lost in that world for a while, and some of the, you know, the definition offered about having a tiger by the tail is that you've started something which is very dangerous, and, you know, you can't stop, because if you stop it, then it could almost consume you, you know. So if you let go of the tiger's tail, the tiger will, you know, kill you, but you can't. But you also need to hold on to it to stay alive, so to speak. And it kind of sounds to me, to a certain extent, it might not be intentional, but your organization, you're also kind of in that space where you've started something that, if you let go of, you know, it could become dangerous, but the opportunities of holding on are, you know, insurmountable, so to speak.
As follow through, you will only leave the tail if your mind gets constrained again,
yeah,
somewhere down the path.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there's many tigers, tails that we're holding currently, and we're sort of like prioritizing them.
Okay.
You know, I spoke about three, but there's another seven to follow. The danger is if you start with four, five, and six, you know, then you're going to leave tail one,
two,
and then
three,
you're
yeah.
in trouble.
Mm.
So I think, you know, that principle remains. And I mean, you know, being on the show here today, if there's any people out there that's keen on getting involved in a business like this, you know, I need people to put in leadership roles to make all of this work
yeah.
at the end of the day.
Yeah. I want to then just talk about jobs. You know, when we had the meeting with your team, I said, you guys are in such a great position. You're selling something everybody wants, which is a job. So it should be easy. We're done. But it's not that simple, right? And part of it, I guess, is the skills match that sometimes is lacking. But I guess another part is getting young people to think differently. What advice or input would you give to maybe not just young people, but people out there about how do they embrace this digital world if they feel that it's something that may be too removed from what they're doing today? You know, I'm an accountant or finance controller or something like that, and I feel that this is something that's more inclined for someone from the IT side of the business. What type of insights do you offer to them?
Well, let's just one step back. So I met the actuary, which I classify as a lateral outward thinking actuary.
Okay.
So that doesn't make sense, right?
No, not at all.
So it's typically, I mean, he got into the consulting side, actuarial science, that the mundane, everyday sort of actuarial work, and then decided, you know what, I hate this. And when he decided he hated this, you know, he sort of like flipped into a different mindset. So I would say definitely, what's the things that, you know, and I said it earlier, you know, really pisses you off, you know, that's what the young people should look at, you know, and how are they going to change that? When we went to Australia with the Raspberry brand integration, one of our consultants in Australia, at the end of the workshop stood up and he said, like, guys, I hate this brand. The logo is shitty. You know, I really hate it.
Yeah.
And you're like, who are you? You know?
Yeah.
And then, can you back it up? And he said, yes. And he opened the slide deck and he actually put work into redesigning it. He's done it already.
Wow.
So what I'm saying is also don't be the guy who just says what's wrong with everything.
Mm.
Also come up with a solution.
Yeah.
I think, you know, South Africans, but people as a whole, you know, human beings, we're smart people. You know, we just need to apply our minds.
Yeah, absolutely. And any other insights you'd share? I mean, you know, employment is such a big topic. We're trying to grow the economy. I mean, we're growing at less than 2%. What are some of the things, and not just young people, what are some of the things we need to start doing more of to get ourselves into a space where we can add value differently in a digital world?
Look, digital is the fastest growing economy, you know, worldwide and in our country as well. It's the economy.
Mm.
I think we're growing at a rate higher than the US, for instance, at this point in time.
From a digital perspective.
From
a smaller base, yeah, of course. Yeah.
But it is new.
Yeah.
You know, I think I really urge, you know, companies to like maybe take hands and say, you know, one company on its own can't solve getting more people into the community and more people, you know, into jobs to start actually executing these strategies. If we don't do that, the work's going to go somewhere else and it's not going to go to us.
Yeah.
And having the digital revolution as a great contributor to the economy, and like you rightfully say so, growing at a rate of less than 2%, we have a fighting chance here with increasing that if, you know, we work together and work smarter.
Mm.
I think if you look at our model, it's not about us or I, you know. Like DevOps, the example I gave.
Yeah.
Why go and do it myself? You know, there is a company out there that I found that can actually get me there and themselves there.
Yeah.
From when we started our partnership, they were less than 60 people, sort of October of last year. They're now nearly 80.
Wow.
So, and they've been in existence since 2010. So they could only reach that mark.
Yeah. You know, and but now in collaborating with you, the scale effect kicks in. Yeah.
Because they're technical people, they know what they want to do, but, you know, from a commerce perspective and really scaling business out, they lack that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, if we do more of that, I think, you know, we'd make huge impact.
Yeah. What's really great, before we wrap up our conversation is, you know, if one understood AdCorp or Paracon or, you know, some of the businesses you have in the talk, which are great South African businesses, you might only think, you know, placements or workforce or whatever, but you've given a different perspective on that. And I think the opportunity is for companies in other industries to realize that it's not a big step. It's not a big leap. I mean, a year ago, you decided, hey, here's a company. What can we do to engage the digital era? And, I mean, you said you've got upwards of 300 to 400 people now within the tiger-tailed environment. So I think the opportunity is there for other industries as well to quickly scale out and do new things within the space that they operate.
Well, I must say, if you look at AdCorp alone, how much they contribute to the employment rate in South Africa. I mean, Adcorp employs more than 90,000 non-professional workers in this country.
Fantastic. So on that note then, Peter, the show, we really talk about disruption, although we try not to use too much jargon. But I really would like for you, I mean, you've said already, you're someone who likes to deal with things that piss you off. So you're somewhat of a maverick. How would you define disruption?
Again, I'll come back to that point.
Uh-huh.
It's one thing to change something that, you know, really doesn't work for you.
Yeah.
You know, disruption and innovation, there's many forms of it.
Yeah.
But it really boils down to that for me, you know. You can go and Google some, you know, defined scientific, you know, explanation for what disruption really is.
Mm-hmm.
But it is really, I mean, like, look at this place. You know, it's built off the back of, you know, things not working process-wise or outcome-wise the way that you wanted it to work.
Yes.
And now you have the thing that works for you.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. And your vision for South Africa and the continent as we embark on the next, I guess they call it revolution of economies and societies. What's your vision for us?
Last year I spent 5 days at Gartner, mm-hmm. and the keynote speaker on the last day left the audience with the following message, and I think, you know, that's the one that hit home for me. So if you think human, you'll build a brand and a business. So I think for Africa, as long as we do think human in all the things that we do, you know, this continent can just grow from strength to strength.
Fantastic. Thinking human, one thing that is common for most of the guests that come on the show, whether I ask them about disruption or ask them about the future, it's always human. And as much as we might spend, you know, 30, 45 minutes talking about digital and robots and AI and self-driving vehicles, what's common across everybody is that human aspect. And I think it's something to really keep close to all of us. Peter, thank you so much for joining us on the show. It's been
fantastic. Thanks for having me.
And all the best with Tiger Digital. Tiger Tail Digital. We look forward to what's happening in those sixth and seventh pillars that you spoke about and some new disruptive energy really coming from within South Africa and with the partnerships you're forming globally. To our listeners on the show, thank you for joining us. It's been fascinating really talking about employment and how we can engage employment in a digital era very differently. And it really comes back to, you know, capacitating ourselves and thinking differently, shifting mindsets. For me and Disruptive Employment Lab, thank you for joining us and have a wonderful day.
This is Disrupt with Booming Club, powered by T-Systems. This is CliffCentral.com.